Hi guys, I'm Christian Esguera and welcome to my new podcast, Facts First. Now for this first episode, we're going to talk about the leadership row between House Speaker Alan Peter Cayetano and Congressman Lord Alan Velasco. We know that they have the so-called term-sharing agreement brokered by President Rodrigo Duterte last year. Now under this agreement, Congressman Cayetano was supposed to serve as Speaker during the first 15 months of the Duterte administration, and then he would be followed by Congressman Velasco, who would serve as Speaker during the last 21 months of the Duterte administration. But you know what happened? A few days ago, Speaker Alan Peter Cayetano, following a conversation or a meeting with President Duterte, which also included Congressman Velasco and their respective allies, Speaker Cayetano offered to resign, but that was promptly or perhaps predictably rejected by his allies at the House of Representatives. Now, more importantly, we're going to talk about why the Philippine Congress, in particular the House of Representatives, is susceptible to control by any sitting president, and why the so-called congressional independence is more imagined than real. Now, for today, we are joined by political science professor Julio Tihanqui of De La Salle University. He used to chair the Departments of Political Science and International Studies of De La Salle University. He is also a former dean of the College of Liberal Arts. Thank you very much for joining us on this very first Facts First episode, Dean Tihanqui. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me, and congratulations on this new podcast of yours. And it's an honor to be your first guest for this episode.
Always a privilege, sir. Now, we know what happened in the House of Representatives over the past few days. We've seen what transpired between Congressman Cayetano and Congressman.
Yes.
Were you even surprised in the first place that this thing happened? Cayetano keeping the post?
Well, this is nothing new in Philippine politics. No, I've always believed that in the Philippines, all is fair in love and politics. No, it's not only all is fair in love and war, but also in politics in the Philippines. No, and it's obvious that the other Alan was outmaneuvered, outfoxed, and outwitted by a more crafty and Machiavellian politician in the person of Alan Peter Cayetano. So, well, that's par for the course among politicos, no? And but of course, going beyond the personalities, no, this is not the first time that this happened in our political history. And it is best understood within the prism of what we call in political science as historical institutionalism, no? It's how the rules of politics and how the politicians have played the game of politics in this country. And it can be traced to the institutions that have been established in the past. And it can be traced by how previous politicians played the game in the past. So on paper, constitutionally, under a presidential form of government, in theory, there should be a separation of powers among the branches of government, particularly, most especially, between the executive and the legislative branch. No? But that's on paper, because in reality, that is not always the case, because there are certain political powers and prerequisites that the president possess, no? Both on paper and in practice. No? And what is this? No? This is actually the control of the different levers and resources in the national government. And while, for example, Congress constitutionally is in charge of legislating our annual Appropriations Act, it is actually the executive who is in charge of disbursing and distributing this. So it is already part of the game, no? That there is a give and take, no? And originally, as it evolved, no, institutionally in most presidential forms of government, particularly in the United States, the premise there is that there are strong political parties, no, that will facilitate this balancing act, this quid pro quo between the House leaders, the Senate, and executive. But in a situation like ours, in which our politics is characterized by weak institutions, weak political parties, and personalistic orientation, then it's no surprise that we have this kind of political drama erupting from time to time.
Before we go into the nitty-gritty of why any sitting president always gets to control Congress, in particular the House of Representatives, I'd like to ask you about this very important principle that supporters of Congressman Velasco keep on raising, the palabra de honor or word of honor. Does it even have a place?
Yes.
Given the realities in Philippine politics.
Yes, of course, on certain levels, no. For example, in the past, we have there was some kind of honor among teams, among politicians in the past, no. In the colonial period, no. In the Commonwealth era, no. This was the era of the gentleman politicians, no. In which honor was really taken seriously, no. And in fact, in some instances in other countries, no, if one's honor is put in doubt or question, it would lead into a duel, no, either a sword fight or a gun duel. And even during the time of the olden days, no, in Philippine politics, no, if you will look at history, there have been instances of Quezon challenging rival politicians to a fist fight, no. If their honor is questioned, or even of tales of the Laurels in Batangas, no, picking up really physical fights over honor, no, over palabra de honor. And sadly, while this is a conservative and very traditional practice, no, well, it's one of those values that we have missed, no, with our present crop of politician, in which one's word is no longer taken seriously and can be discarded anytime. So even from a perspective of just legal contracts, no, you know, it's like, you know, turning your back on something that you have affixed or agreed on or affixed your signature on. So, but beyond the personal, no, again, this is also a indication of the weakness of our politics, no, because if we had institutionalized and strong parties, the agreement, the term sharing, will be based on a common platform of government or a common agenda. And this is more common in parliamentary systems. No? Governments rise and fall on the basis of coalition building and on the basis of agreements, no? Whether it's term sharing or coalition agreements, the very practice of negotiating alliances and coalition and term sharing in terms of whether it's the presidency or the prime minister, well, it originated in the parliamentary form of government, which unfortunately we do not have. And plus the fact that we have weak political parties. So it's really more of a personalistic transactional, no? Like, for example, it's pare, birthday ko naman, pagbigyan mo na ako, no? So it's so absurd, no? I mean, the fate of the country, no, and our post-pandemic future depends on the celebration of the birthday of the speaker, whoever that speaker may be. So really, have we reached that low in our politics? So some of our parents, grandparents would yearn from the old days, no, in which politicians, even if they are politicians, would keep their palabra de honor.
In this case, you didn't see anything wrong with the term sharing agreement per se, or it was okay. It was disastrous, and was it wrong or a miscalculation on the part of Congressman Velasco to actually enter into that and allow Cayetana to first draft?
Right. Well, first, personal observation, no, hindi man malalim na political science analysis, though. You know, he was a shoo-in, no? Everybody thought he would be the speaker, no? Because he was the I think the highest elected leader of PDP Laban in the House, no? And he was the after former Speaker Alvarez and after former Senate President Coco Pimentel, he was the next in line to be the leader of the PDP Laban, which is the de facto administration party under the Duterte administration. So it's quite logical and quite obvious that he would be the next speaker. And he was already a shoo-in. And of course, you have to credit the tenacious ability of Speaker Cayetano to be able to grasp and to draw victory out of defeat. No, so you know, Lord Alan Velasco was already a shoo-in. He was able to convince on the premise that it would save the coalition, it would continue the working alliance among different parties, and he managed to convince the president to broker this deal. And of course, it was a miscalculation also on the part of Lord Alan to actually believe that after 15 months, power will naturally be handed over to him, because now that Speaker Alan has the first dibs, already he has been able to place his key lieutenants and key allies in the different political parties in the alliance. And naturally, they will not give up their position of perks and power.
Okay, pero in the first place, do you think it was wrong on the part of Congressman Velasco to rely on another person's word of honor? Or did he actually just rely on that? Because I assume he was not as naive as some people might think.
Right. Well, I think he was prevailed upon, because he was made to understand that it was for the sake of the coalition. And that was how it was packaged by Speaker Cayetano, no? That he should be given an opportunity to lead the House, because he was one of the pillars of this administration's coalition, because he ran for, he was the vice presidential partner of President Duterte, no? And he's been a very staunch ally of the president. So it was packaged in that manner, that it was part of preserving the coalition until 2022. No, but this is actually the very first time in recent political history that the leader of the ruling party was not given the opportunity to become speaker. No, if you look at all the post-Marcos congresses, no, the leader, the speaker, usually comes from the ruling party. And even if the ruling party was not the original ruling party elected to the House, because of this institutionalized practice of party switching, which is again triggered by the executive. No, usually whoever wins the presidency, no matter whether his party is the majority or not, would become the instant majority because of what the Japanese political scientist Yuko Kasuya calls presidential bandwagon in the Philippines, no? Meaning to say, after every election, all politicians who are elected would jump to the winning party, no? So, and that's all. That has always been the case. So, if you look at the time of Cory Aquino, no, when LDP, Laban ng Demokratikong Pilipino, became the largest party, Ramon Mitra was the speaker, no? And it was Ramon Mitra who organized LDP together with Pepin Cuanco. And then with Speaker Joe De Venecia, they were just, Lakas was just a Volkswagen party. But when Fidel Ramos was elected president, Lakas became the largest party, and so on and so forth. No, so even during the time, for example, of Joseph Estrada, Manny Villar was not really originally a member of Erap Estrada's party, but he had to join the ruling party then, the Laban ng Makabayang Masang Pilipino, to be elected speaker, and so on and so forth. So until recently, no, until Bebot Alvarez and former President Gloria Macapagal. GMA had to be sworn in as a member of PDP Laban to become speaker. No? And this is the first time, which is strange, no, that a partner, and supposed to be just a junior partner of PDP Laban, because PDP Laban is larger than the Nacionalista Party, that the leader, one of the leaders of the Nacionalista Party, was elected speaker. So even that arrangement is quite different, no, under this administration. So it was really in deference, perhaps, to the titular head of the ruling coalition, which is President Duterte himself, no, and up to now, perhaps, so Lord Alan was hoping that the other Alan would even defer to the wishes of President Duterte.
So to be sure, this is a first, right? But does it even matter, because we know that our political party system is very weak. So
yes,
a lot of people don't actually care under which party they belong, as long as they
precisely So what I'm saying is, in the past there was, you know, they would go through the shadow playing, no, the drama of at least having a semblance of a party, no. But we have reached that point that even that drama, no, that shadow play of, you know, going through the motion of affiliating with the ruling party, is no longer practiced, no, or no longer followed, no. So which is also again a new low for party politics in the Philippines. No, this does not promote, no, the institutionalization of party politics, but this practices further weakens, no, if you base the continuation of your legislative agenda not on an actual platform of government, or based on a solid platform of government agreed upon by different members of the ruling coalition, but it is based on who is celebrating his or his birthday, no, the speaker who's celebrating his, that is a, you know, a new low for party politics in the Philippines. So it's determined by whose birthday, no, rather than the especially in this time of who will, it's a question of who will deliver us from this pandemic, no? Who will provide us a future in our post-pandemic future? But no, it's a question of birthday ko naman, pare, pagbigyan mo na ako, no? So,
also, diba? One,
so it's so frustrating.
Yeah, I don't know whether you noticed this also. During this back and forth between Congressman Velasco and Congressman Cayetano, they kept talking about the term sharing agreement, but I didn't notice any discussion on a platform or, let's say, a legislative agenda between the two.
Precisely. Well, there's that, you know, mention of we need to pass the budget because of the pandemic. But of course, we all know that part of the incentive is 2022, no, because this is going to be a part of an election budget, no, and this will determine their chances in the next electoral cycle in 2022. So the stakes are high, really, but not because of the pandemic. And you know, they don't even make an effort to at least posture that this is going to be for the good of the Filipino people, no. So
but the very idea of President Duterte brokering a term sharing deal and openly clinching the spot for Alan Peter Cayetano last year, yes. Don't you find anything grossly inappropriate in this?
Not really, because in my previous research, no, and my previous study co-authored with Yuko Kasuya of Keio University, we made the argument that this president is unique because he is a populist president, and unlike previous post-EDSA presidents, no, who have relied on traditional party politics through the distribution of patronage, no, and to attract party switchers, no, so So from the time of LDP to Lakas to LAMP, no, the general pattern was whoever wins the presidency, his or her party will become the ruling party by attracting party switchers, by offering pork, no, or other patronage. No, this is the kind of clientelistic ties that have been institutionalized. But this president is unique. In the previous Congress, he was hands-off in the build-up of the PDP Laban. He left it to his lieutenants, no, particularly then Speaker Alvarez and then Senate President Coco Pimentel. But he did not have a direct hand in building up PDP Laban. So it is no surprise that if you have that kind of a mindset, and the president is supposed to be not only a the chief executive, he has his political role, no, to play. He's the titular head of his party and the titular head of his ruling coalition.
In that case, he didn't find anything wrong with the president directly interfering in the to settle the leadership dispute?
No. Our argument is that unlike, this is the first time and the only time that the president intervened. No, he never intervened from the very beginning. He did not play a big part in strengthening his own political party, which was PDP Laban. Because if you look at all the post-EDSA, post-Marcos presidents, Fidel Ramos had a hand in supporting Speaker De Venecia, Pepin Cuanco, who is the surrogate then of Cory Aquino, had a hand in helping Ramon Mitra, and so on and so forth, right? So in this case, bahala kayo. So this president, because he is in fact a populist president, his idea was that his election was directly from the people. He did not rely on the politicians. He did not rely on... And there was ilan lang naman na sumuporta sa presidente nung panahon na yon. So sa kanyang pag-iisip, lahat na sumuporta sa akin, eh, kailangan kong tulungan. No? And in fact, that was the key to the success of Alan Peter. No? Because President Duterte was not a serious party man, but he was thinking of his allies rather than parties. No? So it became a personalistic and even populist, no, transaction. No? Na, I am the leader. This is my decision. You follow. Now, the implication here is if Alan Peter doesn't follow the wishes of the president, then what will happen to the ruling coalition? And of course, PDP Laban, and I heard some of the other parties who are silently, quietly allied with PDP Laban and Alan, Lord Alan, is not satisfied with the recent turn of events. No, offer to resign, and offer to resign rejected, which is also not really, it's really part of a political drama, no? So it's just part of the maneuvering.
Because if you wanted to quit, really quit, you just have quit. And then perhaps one Congress.
Yes. And this is in deference to the president. I mean, whether you are for this president or not, no, there are certain, of course, part of the rules of the game. No? Well, of course, just like in basketball, no, there are rules and there are rules, right? So, di ba? No harm, no foul, eh, di ba? So, talagang blood sport na itong politika natin ngayon. So, talagang patay. Kasi nga, it's the stakes are high, no? Aside from the election, it's going to be an election budget. These are rising political stars, no? I mean, we all know that Alan Peter is gunning for the presidency or at least the vice presidency again in 2022. And Lord Alan is a rising star within his party. So, talagang ganyan. But if this is the kind of rising stars we have, nako.
Let's talk about the so-called congressional independence. A few years ago, I spoke with one congressman on the program, P.D. Barzaga of Cavite. He was very candid in admitting that the so-called complete independence of the House of Representatives can be considered as an impossible dream. Because according to him, if you are a district congressman, it's all about projects that you can deliver to your constituents.
Yes.
Now, in this case, is there anything wrong with the system, or should we just accept it? Or how, if there's really a very big problem as far as the system is concerned, how do we fix it?
Aha. So yeah, well, this is part of patronage politics, no, or what we call clientelistic politics. No, patronage refers to the resources, the projects, and all the public goods that are distributed by politicians. And clientelism is the relationship between the giver and the taker. No, and usually you can find this in economically underdeveloped localities or communities. No, so our and then, of course, it's prevalent in underdeveloped countries, no, society. But you can also find this in developed industrialized countries, no. There's patronage politics in Japan, no. From time to time, political scandals are reported in Japanese media, so it is also common in Japan, no. But what the difference is that we are a developing country with a large population of the poor, no, and it is it is of course a you know, a curse, no, on us that you know, what could have been provided for our development is usually used for political patronage by our politicians. No, again. There are no easy solutions to this, but of course, part of the solution would be really to strengthen, no, our party system, and of course, the usual spectrum, full spectrum of reforms that we need. No, we have to rethink our electoral system. We have to rethink about regulating the role of political dynasties, because that's also part of the political monopoly that feeds on patronage politics. We need to look at campaign finance reform. So it's an entire spectrum of electoral and political reforms. The problem is, how can we do it when our political system is already overtaken by all these traditional politicians and political dynasties? So it's a chicken and egg problem right now. No?
Is it still possible to come up with a truly independent commons, in particular the hospitals?
Sad to say, no, because you know, already if you just look at the composition of our Congress, no, we are 70% comes from political dynasties, political families. So this is already, we have already institutionalized, no, dynastic politics in the House, no, and even in the party list seats, they have already taken over. So, and they have formed a formidable bloc within all parties, no. So it's really difficult, no. It will really take a new social contract, no, a new social compact in which those who are it's the grand bargain. We're going back to the grand bargain. No? Those who are benefiting from the current system must sacrifice and at least think of the future. No? But of course, that's wishful thinking. No? It's difficult. No? So it's either a portion of those within the current set of elites and a portion of new and emerging elites, no? Meaning to say the young, the professionals, and the other non-elite players to come together and force this change to happen. No? So, and the only way we can do that is to elect new leaders, perhaps, no? To form new coalitions of non-elite candidates. I don't know. It's a pipe dream. I've been struggling and working for this my entire life, no, and I'm already reaching the point of really giving up.
Very important for our listeners to realize that you have been espousing this political and electoral reforms for so long. And in fact, when you were part of the consultative committee,
yes,
which drafted a proposed federal constitution,
yes,
for the Philippines. You were in charge
yes.
of leading the yeah. discussions on political and electoral reforms.
Now, precisely.
Regarding that,
yes.
given the tight window that was left under the Duterte administration, do you think it's over for any kind of political and electoral reform to take place under this administration?
Well, yeah, I've been researching, studying, and even participating in all these reform efforts. No, and to be fair, I've given all the post-Marcos, post-EDSA presidents and administrations a chance. No, to and usually at the beginning of their term, there's that window of opportunity in which they're open to these reforms. No, so from the time of Fidel Ramos all the way to Noynoy Aquino, no? There were even Gloria Macapagal Arroyo pushed for some reforms. But every time by the end of the their term, suddenly their priorities would shift, no? Because it's about preserving their legacy and ensuring that whoever they support would win. No? And so they had to play the same game over and over again. So we're just going through this cycle of, you know, political development and decay. You know, so it's like a boom bust in our politics. So there's always that hope at the beginning of an administration. Then suddenly, then we're back to square one. So, yeah. So I don't know. So I don't know how to. Well, it depends really on the next electoral cycle.
Better to wait after 2020.
Yes, please.
Finally, Dean, you mentioned something very interesting.
Yes.
Not disturbing earlier. The fact that President
yes.
Did not actively participate in party building. But he also,
as yes.
expected, as was not unexpected, he played the direct role in the choice of a speaker last year. What do you think could be the long-term impact of this?
Right.
A personalistic approach, even under President Duterte, given the fact that early on, he was supposedly espousing political and electoral reform as well.
In fact, that made President Duterte different from, let's say, President Fidel Ramos, who actively intervene in all the political intramurals in Congress, both the Senate and the House. No, there were a series of turnovers of Senate president, if you will recall, in the 90s, and Malacanang played a very big role in that. No, so in fact, that makes this president really different, because first he did not. He did not participate in party building. He did not actively participate in party building. But at the same time, he did not really intervene unless necessary. So it was only during that point that these two instances that he intervened, unlike previous presidents who would regularly intervene to make sure that their allies and their coalition would... So again, it's, you know, it's the kind of populist leadership. But then again, Estrada was populist, but he also played a role in strengthening his coalition. No? So so that's the reason why the coalition is unstable, because the president did not really intervene or did not play his role as a titular head of the coalition, as a political leader of the coalition. So perhaps this is part of...
By the way, Dean, there are also... I know of some congressmen who are also questioning the party DNA of Congressman Velasco, that he may be part of the PDP mm-hmm. party, but his DNA may not necessarily be that of PDP Lapa, right? And also, how do you think this...
Yes.
Cayetano and Velasco would affect the chamber in the long term, or at least during the remaining remainder of the Duterte administration?
Well, of course, we cannot comment on the political DNA of Lord Allen, because practically all these politicians have questionable political DNAs to begin with, no? Because they're all party switchers, no? So what I can see is that it's going the next 2 years, especially if the speaker would not agree to the term limits, would be unstable, will further destabilize the House, because definitely the other faction will not take this sitting down, and they will spend the next year and a half, no, trying to undermine this speaker, no. So this will not turn good. This will not end well for this speakership if he does not at least try to agree to the original agreement of term sharing.
Thank you very much, Dean Tihaki, for joining us on this inaugural podcast of Facts First. Always a pleasure to see you.
Thank you very much.